The verse I've been reading consecutively through now up to 3rd Canto, chapter 9, and the verse for this evening is a very nice general verse about Krishna. And the holy name, so I thought that would be a nice... Krishna Rain is such a nice, attractive verse for this evening. We'll just discuss that one. It's chapter 9, text 15. This is Lord Brahma praying to Lord Vishnu prior to the act of recreating or the sub-creation of the lower portion of the universe, because at the end of each night of Brahma, when his alarm goes off and it's time to begin the next day, he does his morning sadhana. He offers prayers to the personality of Godhead to permit him to do that which he has done every other day, but with empowerment he's looking to the Supreme Lord for that, investing him with the potency to do this incredible service of reconstructing the universe. And he's also interested very keenly in being empowered to deliver the knowledge of transcendence to those who are in this complex place of material creation, to get situated again in their spiritual position. So that the means for that, it's embedded in this verse, it's the chanting of the holy name. So here's his prayer. I'll just read the first couple lines of the Sanskrit because they're very nice. Yasyavatara guna karma vidambanani namani ye suvigame vivasha grananti. Let me take shelter of the lotus feet of him whose incarnations, qualities, and activities are mysterious imitations of worldly affairs. Exactly the other way around. But this is what Brahma is saying, so we'll see how it's discussed in the purport. One who invokes his transcendental names even unconsciously, it's a little difficult to, like, you're unconscious and you're calling his name, but you're meaning unintentionally, sanketya, namavas, even unintentionally, even unconsciously, at the time he quits this life, like a Jamila, called Narayana, intending his son, but he was calling Narayana. So even unconsciously at the time he quits this life, is certainly washed immediately of the sins of many, many births, and attains him without fail. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The activities of the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are a kind of imitation of the activities going on in the material world. He is just like an actor on the stage. An actor imitates the activities of a king on a stage, although actually he is not the king. Similarly, when the Lord incarnates, he imitates parts with which he has nothing to do. In Bhagavad Gita 4:14, it is said that the Lord has nothing to do with the activities in which he is supposedly engaged. Na karmani limpanti na me karma palais braha. The Lord is omnipotent. Simply by his will he can perform anything and everything. Then now he gives some four examples. When the Lord appeared as Lord Krishna, he played the part of the son of Nanda and Yasoda. And he lifted the Govardhan Hill. Although lifting a hill is not his concern, he can lift millions of Govardhan Hills by his simple desire. He does not need to lift it with his hand. But he imitates the ordinary living entity by this lifting, and at the same time he exhibits his supernatural power. Thus his name is chanted as the lifter of Govardhan Hill, or Sri Govardhanadhari. Therefore, his acts in his incarnations and his particularity to the devotees, we discussed that this morning, covered again, are all imitations only, just like the stage makeup of an expert dramatic player. He acts in that capacity, however. His acts are all omnipotent, and the remembrance of such activities of the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are as powerful as the Lord Himself. Ajamila remembered the holy name of the Lord Narayana by merely calling the name of his son Narayana, and that gave him a complete opportunity to achieve the highest perfection of life. So several nice things in this verse. One is the apparent activity of the Lord, although he remains the non-doer. So that comes, that discussion from Bhagavad Gita, is there's a series of verses where Krishna is describing, well, I'll read the verse, where Krishna is describing the position of those in this world that are really motivated to get quick enjoyment. So they engage in fruitive activities because through fruitive activities they can get quick enjoyment, and especially through the Vedic rituals of worship of the demigods, they get very elevated enjoyment, and so they're inclined in that way. This is text 12 of chapter 4, Bhagavad Gita. Men in this world desire success and fruitive activities, and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get results from fruitive work in this world. In the next verse, Krishna describes that he creates the system, the varna and ashram system, according to guna and karma. Chatur varnamaya srishtam guna karma vibhagasha. So Krishna says, maya srishtam, he has created it. And then he turns around and says, check this out, I didn't create it. Tasya kartaram api mam, although I am the kartaram, I am the cause, vidi akartaram, you should know that I'm the non-doer. Avyayam. Avyayam? Avyayam, it sometimes means unchangeable or inexhaustible. So to do something, you're depleting your supply, either your energy or your resources or something. That's of this world. When Krishna does something, he's avyayam. He uses that word, they do not know my higher nature, which is changeless and supreme. Mamavyayam anuttamam. Anuttamam. Changeless and supreme. So avyayam. There's change in material activity from one state to another state and so forth, but for Krishna there's no change because he's doing things in a different manner. He's doing things, as it's described here, simply by his will. So Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill is the example given in the purport. So Krishna lifts the Govardhan Hill with his hand. Not only his hand, but his left hand. Not only his left hand, but the little finger of his left hand. Like, what does that say? He's not lifting the mountain with the little finger of his left hand. That's what it says. He's lifting the mountain by his will. But he's doing it like he's one of us, so he's lifting it with his hand. But so it's really clear, it's the little finger of his left hand that he holds it up for 7 days. And it's not like, just try to hold your arm up for 7 days. What to speak of? Put something on it. What to speak of? A big, heavy rock. What to speak of? A mountain. Like, you know, it's not humanly possible. But he's doing something like he's one of us. He can lift, as the purport is saying, he can lift millions of Govardhan hills just by his will. He can create them, he can maintain them, he can destroy them, he can manifest them, he can withdraw them, he can lift them, he can sink them, he can do whatever he wants without doing anything, because it's all being carried out by his energies. Krishna wills and his energies carry out his will. He doesn't even have to, like, he doesn't have to do anything. Just wills. And so it was, like the Old Testament describes the act of creation. The Lord said, let there be light, and so there was. And then he said, this is good. And then the next day, let there be something. And so there was. Just by his willing. It's not... There's more details to that. Than so it was, is there's a whole sequence of unfolding of his energies as they're fulfilling his desire. Someone in one of our gatherings in the course of this visit was sharing that, you know, well, in the scriptures it says that Shakti is supreme, and Shakti does this, and Shakti does that, and Shakti is supreme. And I said, yes. And that Shakti that's supreme, who's the Shaktiman? Who's the possessor of that Shakti? From whom does that Shakti derive her power? Well, she's just power. So where's their power without powerful? Where's their energy without energetic? It's not wrong, it's right. Our scriptures also describe the Brahma Samhita. Srishti Stiti Pralaya Sadhana Shaktir Eka Shaktir Eka Chayevya Yasha Bhuvanani Bivarti Durga. We're praising Durga for this Srishti Stiti Pralaya. But she's worshipping Govinda because she derives her strength from him. There's this very nice pastime in Chaitanya's Leela, where Lord Chaitanya, still as a teenager, Brahmin Nimai Pandit, in charge of a school, he was so good that he learned everything his teacher had to teach in a matter of days. The teacher didn't have any more subject matters to teach, so he did the right smart thing, he engaged him as an assistant to teach some of the other students. And Nimai Pandit was such a good assistant that all the other kids wanted to be in his class. And all the parents wanted to have their kids in his class. He had a big class. And it just grew and grew, and they would have their class by the side of the Ganges every day, underneath the big tree, in the shade of the big tree. They'd have their class on Sanskrit grammar. And one time in Navadvip, the Keshava Kashmiri, a Digvijay Pandit from Kashmir, came with his entourage of people who had surrendered unto him because he was so good in debate. So vastly learned. So when he came to town, to Navadvip, because it was a seat of high learning, he asked, who's the most learned person in Navadvipa? I'd like to engage them in debate. All the brahmanas pointed to Nimai Pandit. He's the best. They didn't want to be defeated by him. So, you know, but he's just a young man, teenager. Yeah, but he's the best. So he came to where Nimai Pandit was having his class under a big tree. Proud, very prideful man. Sometimes it happens that learned people are proud. Sometimes it happens that they're humble, but more often they're proud. So he came, and Nimai, being a young, very cultured Brahmin boy, immediately stood in respect of Keshava Kashmiri. Greeted him very warmly, very affectionately, and said, "Oh, you're Keshava Kashmiri. I've heard of you. You're such a brilliant scholar in Sanskrit. We're here by the side of the Ganges. Could you kindly offer some wonderful prayers to Mother Ganges in Sanskrit?" "Oh, yes, I can do that." And spontaneously, you ever try to write poetry? Yes. It takes a long time, doesn't it? But to speak of Sanskrit? Spontaneously, he began reciting, like the verse says, like the blowing of the wind. Verses in Sanskrit, rhyming with meter and alliteration and beautiful verses, 100 verses. It took almost an hour. So when he was done, Nimai Pandit said, "That was amazing. You're such a scholar. Could you tell us in the 54th verse what were the ornaments and the faults of that verse?" The 54th verse. I was just reciting these things. I wasn't keeping track. And so, and how would you know what's your Sanskrit grammar student? How would you know what are qualities and faults of poetic verses? He said, "In the course of learning, one is to learn many things. What are the qualities and the faults of that 54th verse?" So I can't even remember. You want to say what they are? You can say what they are. If you by your order, I can do that. And describe the ornaments, and then describe the faults. And Digvijaya Pandit was a worshipper of goddess Saraswati. So he had been such an ardent worshipper of Saraswati. Saraswati once appeared before him and blessed him, that "You are such a faithful, wonderful worshipper. I give you this benediction that you will always be able to defeat anyone in verbal discussion. I'll give you the knowledge by which you can do that." So that was why he was Digvijaya Pandit, going around thinking, "God of Saraswati's got me covered." But when Nimai Pandit pointed out the faults, there were three specific faults. One was the fault of redundancy. He had repeated something twice, it just was awkward. And, well, you know, a double negative, one canceled out another thing. Although the meter was there and the rhyme was there, the meaning was not right. So he was speechless. And when Digvijaya Pandit was speechless, all the kids in the class started laughing at him. And Nimai Pandit said, no, he's a great scholar. This isn't right. This is not good etiquette. Don't laugh at Keshava. He's a very elevated person. Please do us the honor that you can come back again tomorrow and instruct us further in wonderful Sanskrit teachings." Yes, I'll come back tomorrow." And he left. And it was towards the end of the day, and so as the sun was setting, he did his evening puja to Saraswati. And his mind was very puzzled, and he praying to her, why did you abandon me? You've always been there to protect and provide whatever intelligence is needed so that I could be victorious. And you gave me this promise that you would always do that. But you didn't do that. Have I offended you in some way? Have something been wrong? Please reveal this to me. And he took rest. And in his dream at night, Goddess Saraswati appeared and chastised him severely. He said, you have become so proud that you do not even recognize who is my master. I am deriving my capacity to give you benedictions from that very same person who you challenged and was wishing to defeat. But how can I give you the capacity to defeat my master? For that reason, your tongue was silent. Now I instruct you, you go to this young boy who is actually the personality of Godhead, and you beg his forgiveness, and you become his student. And he woke up, thinking, what am I going to do? I've offended the goddess Saraswati. Now I have to go to this teenage boy and surrender to him. But he did that. He recognized this was Saraswati's instruction for him. And Nimai smiled, said, you're such a great personality, how can this be possible? You just go on worshipping the personality of Godhead, who is the source of all benedictions, and become happy in that way. So the back to the Bhagavatam verse, that when those who are Krishna is describing in this fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that he creates that system, the Varnashram system, whereby according to Varna, according to Guna and Karma, living entities have some facility for performing Vedic practices. He does that for their elevation. And then he says, although I am the creator of this system, I am yet the non-doer. Although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. Because what's changing is Prakriti, or Shakti, and Shaktiman is unchanging. Behind the changing is the unchanging Supreme. And then this verse that Prabhupada quotes in the purport here. Namam karmani limpanti. There is no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. He's creating a system where those who desire fruits of their action can receive fruits of their action. For him, the creator of that system, he has no interest in the fruits of action. Nor is he the creator of that by his own, like, lifting, his own work, but is being conducted by his energies, his potencies. One who understands this truth about me also does not become entangled in the fruitive reactions of work. Iti mam yo bijanati karma bir na sabadhyate. Oh, it's like Krishna saying, one who understands me does not have to take birth again in this material world. Janma karma chime divyam. You guys know that verse? Can you say it? You're worried about making a mistake and blowing it again today. Okay. Chaktva deham. You forgot. You know the verse? You know it. You're just testing us. You know the verse too? Let's hear it. Janma karma Pancham? No? Okay. In that verse, Krishna says, Janma karma cha me divyam, Janma karma cha me divyam. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance, janma, and my activity, evam yo veti. Veti comes from the word vid, to know. One who knows the divyam, the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, chaktva deham, giving up this body, purnar janma na, doesn't take another birth. You with me? You paying attention? Okay. Doesn't take birth again. Purnar janma na. So by understanding the transcendental nature of Krishna's janma and his karma, in truth, doesn't take birth again. So, that's in the fourth chapter. Here, this is also the fourth chapter where he's saying one who understands that he's the creator of the system and yet the non-doer. When one understands that about Krishna, that person doesn't take birth again. Like, what's Krishna's position when he's lifting Govardhan Hill? Whoops, left hand. Lifting Govardhan Hill. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not like a magician or Houdini or, you know, some magical personality. He's the Personality of Godhead. He's actually, it's not lifting Govardhan Hill with his hand, although that's the Leela. He lifts with his hand. He's like, it's Prabhupada is describing here, it's like the actor on the stage. That, you know, he's a king. But he's not a king, he's an actor on the stage. But Krishna's not a cowherd boy that lifts Govardhan Hill. He is a cowherd boy who lifts Govardhan Hill in his Leela. It's a transcendental Leela. He does it. But he's the personality, he's the source of Govardhan Hill. He's the source of everything. He's performing Leela. That's the Janma Karma Chime Divyam. Divyam, transcendental. Divyam, like divine. Right, Panchu? You're with it, right? Okay. So, therefore, when one calls upon that name, Sri Govardhana Dhari, Giri Dhari, lifter of the Govardhan Hill, that sound vibration is none different than the person, because as the person is absolute, the name is absolute. And by hearing the name, that's what he's saying, that's what Brahma is saying in the verse. One who invokes his transcendental names, even unconsciously, at the time he quits this body, quits this life, is certainly washed immediately of sins of many, many births and attains him without fail. It's not just that Ajamila chanted Narayana at the time of death. He was chanting Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. And the verse describes that in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. Narayana, please come and take your meal. Narayana, come sit on the lap of your father. Narayana, something, something, something. Let's go for a walk. Narayana this, Narayana that, because he's attached to his son, calling his son's name. Each of those times that he was calling his son's name, the same potency was invested in that chanting. And when the discussion between the Yamadutas, who are describing what's the codes of Dharma, saying, this man, he's very sinful. So many millions and millions and years of sinful activities he's done. And he never did any atonement for those sins, so he's punishable. So please step aside, you're ready to take him. And the Vishnu Dutta said, we're not stepping aside, you don't even know what the principles of Dharma are. Yes, it's true he was so sinful. And there's no sins he didn't commit. But he called the name Narayana. And yes, it's true he was intending to call his son. That's true. But because he was calling Narayana, nonetheless, the potency was there to eliminate not only the sins in this life as a jamila, but millions and millions of sinful reactions from previous lives. He's been cleansed of those reactions. So you're not understanding the principles of Dharma. You better go back to Dharma school. Go to Yamaraj and have him train you. Who has stopped death? Who has the power to stop death? None of us have the power to stop death. But Krishna has the power, because even death is under the direction of the Supreme Lord. As knowledge, in the case of Keshava Kashmiri, was in the direction of the Supreme Lord, or forgetfulness was also in the direction of the Supreme Lord. Mataksmatir Gyanam Apohanam Cha Sarvasya Chaham Riddhi Sannivishto. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Riddhi Sannivishto, I'm situated in the heart of every living being, and from me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So what to speak of Goddess Saraswati, who is receiving knowledge from the Supreme Lord and gives that to her devotees. Ultimately, it's the Supreme Lord who is the source of that. And one who knows that position and calls upon that name, now, even unintentionally, even unconsciously, looking for the Sanskrit, well, it's in the sixth canto, is Sankhetya. It's by the way the Prabhupada translates it there is by assignation. You assign a name to something, like the devotees in Los Angeles that make the fiberglass drums, they call it the Balaram Mridanga. Have you seen?
Yeah.
A little logo on the side of the fiberglass drums?
At the temple.
Okay. Balaram. Because Prabhupada said Balaram expands himself into the various paraphernalia that's used in the Lord's service. His shoes, his umbrella, his bed, his garments, the drum. It's paraphernalia. So it's an expansion of Balaram. In Los Angeles, like 1 year after the devotees had formed the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, they didn't have mridanga. They just had whatever they could get for drums. But one devotee went to India, got a drum, found out from Prabhupada what it is, and got one, mridanga, and brought it and presented it to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was sitting at his desk, and he immediately got up from his desk, paid obeisances to the drum, took off his uttariya, the upper cloth, and carefully wrapped the drum. He was teaching by example to the devotees that we respect, because it's Balaram. It's directly used in Krishna's service, so it has its sacred function and takes on a sacred meaning or significance for the devotee. So what to speak of directly the names of the Supreme Lord? They have that potency. Even if without intention, so Balaram or Danga, or another is Tadiya, where there's paraphernalia that's used in worship. Tadiya means in relation to the Lord. In the Chicago temple, there are three altars, Gauritai, Kishore Kishori, and Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra. And in front, it looks like a Shiva. But I asked Shankar Pandit, you know, what Shiva is that? He said, it's not Shiva, it's Tadiya. There was a Nisringa temple, and it's paraphernalia of the Lord from that Nisringa temple. So they placed it on the altar, and they worship as Lord Nisringadev. It's not the same as Shalagram Shila. You know, the origin is different, but the function is the same. And even the dust of Vrindavan. Because the dust of Vrindavan is Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is the abode of the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead. When he appears with his whole abode. So that the place is imbued with spiritual potency. So Lord Brahma is particularly appreciating the means, you know, going back to the broader discussion, he's about to begin creation. Within this creation, he describes those that are nishkam devotees, those that are sakam devotees, and those that are non-devotees, those that are averse to the Supreme Lord. And because of that aversion to the Supreme Lord, they have lots of struggles, sufferings, unnecessary sufferings because of that aversion. And he's concerned about the remedial means, because he's going to have to create this place where lots of people are going to suffer. He's reluctant. But he's relieved that knowing that there is a means to mitigate that suffering. And that mitigation process is remembrance of the Lord, and specifically remembering him through the medium of his calling his holy name. So we're so fortunate, we can just be like half asleep or something in material existence, and just by the mercy of devotees receive the holy name and hear the holy name and chant the holy name and get all this benefit. But at the same time, the Bhagavatam is explaining what's the science behind that spiritual benefit that we derive. Why is it so important to chant? Why do we do it? It's misfortune if one doesn't take that opportunity, and one can also take that opportunity and not. Lord Chaitanya was lamenting, I know the virtue of the holy name, but I don't have attraction. What to do? I know the potency of the holy name. Nam nam akari bahunad nija sarva shaktis. You've invested all of your transcendental potencies in each and every one of your holy names, and you've made access to your holy name so easy. Niyamatak smarane nakala, there's no rules and regulations for it. Durdaivim idrishim mahajanim nano raga. How unfortunate, I have no attraction. We may know that position very well, but he also gives the remedy for that one. Becoming very humble, very tolerant, ready to offer respect to others without wishing respect for oneself in return. In that state, one can chant the holy name constantly. So the path to return to our very healthy, happy state is readily provided. Just take the time. The trouble is not very much, it's more the time. Because it's very nice, but we have to like let go a little bit of that fruitive tendency thing and hear the spiritual messages. And Prabhupada ends the paragraph or purport. Ajamila remembered the holy name of the Lord, Narayana, merely by calling the name of his son, Narayana. And that gave him a complete opportunity to achieve the highest perfection of life. Prime benediction for humanity at large in this age of Kali is this chanting of the holy name. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions anybody like to bring up? Anything?
the chanting matters, we can do it any time.
Sure. Even unconsciously you can do it. As the verse says. Niyamata smarane nikalate. There's no... Niyama means that yama and niyama, injunctions and prohibitions. There's no restrictions for chanting. For Vedic processes, there's restrictions. You have to be in a very clean condition. It has to, best is right time, right circumstance, right paraphernalia, all the details have to be just right. Qualified brahmana who can invoke the Vedic mantras and write all the right meter and so forth, pronunciation. Lots of requirements ahead of time, and with the chanting of the holy name, those requirements are not the same. It's a special dispensation for this age of Kali that unqualified people, they can also participate fully. Even in an unclean place, even in an unclean state. One can chant the holy name of the Lord in the bathroom. You can't perform a Vedic sacrifice in the bathroom. In any condition. Pavitra apavitrova. Saravastam gatopiva. In any purified, not purified, in any circumstance of life.
What are the benefits of chanting merits?
Just described here. Benefits of chanting include, specific to the verse, is millions and millions of reactions of sinful deeds can be eliminated at once by chanting the holy name. Squeaky clean. Just once. So the potency is there within the holy name, what to speak of consciously, intentionally, striving regularly to come to that stage. The potency is there, just our receptivity needs to be improved. And progressively, as that cleansing and purification, the awakening of our tendency, dormant tendency for directly serving the personality of God, up to the stage of love of God and eternally serving with Him. Yes.
When we are trying to give this, ask people to chant, so one time what happened was, one person came to the gathering, and we chant one round every time. So when we are chanting Hare Krishna, we explained about this, the holy name and the voice of Krishna, and we were chanting, and while we were chanting, he was purposefully chanting Om Namah Shivaya. Like while we were chanting Hare Krishna loudly, and we didn't say anything, and we finished the one round, and after that he was so very sinful, that he was criticizing Krishna that way, this way, like why Krishna did have to
without going there, yeah, things.
So how do so then we talked about that day, the verse was about non-violence or something. So then he was questioning various things about Bhagavad Gita and all that. So how do we, what should be the mode, Maharaj, to deal with such stubborn non-devotees? And
you're such a gentle person, it must have been very difficult for you. Yeah, I can imagine. each of us has our nature, and even with our within our nature, there's, you know, different circumstances that might prompt this, that, or the other response. So to give you, like, you know, a flat answer, this is what you do in that circumstance, is a little too much. Because on the one hand, but on the other hand, on the one hand, the person is making offenses. And if you do nothing when the person is making offenses, then you and all the persons who are hearing that offense are sharing in the offense. And then on the other hand, if you take some strong stand, then, you know, those that don't understand exactly why you're taking a strong stand might be confused. But, you know, it's challenging, to say the least. What you do afterwards is a lot easier to articulate than what you do during the midst, in the midst of something like that. Afterwards, in a private dialogue, you explain to the person, when you study Bhagavad Gita, if you're unhappy with the message of Bhagavad Gita, best that you don't come. Because our purpose is to study Bhagavad Gita. If you wish to disrupt the study of Bhagavad Gita, best that you don't come. You have another idea you wish to propagate, find a group of people that want to hear that other idea you wish to propagate and arrange a gathering. That's fine. But don't bring that into this, because that's, we have a different purpose. Respect that purpose that we're gathering here for. So I can't exactly say what, because without the details and, you know, being there and, you know, the mood of the person and, you know, the other people and, you know, taking, factoring in the whole thing, it's hard to, you know. At least I would say, you know, time out, let's draw a line here. There are persons in this room, I'm one of them, but there's others, that the way that you're speaking is offensive. Now, you have conviction in your words, and that's, you know, that's your right. But for some of us in this room, myself included, it's offensive. So please refrain. And if you want some clarification of why we consider it offensive, I can give you some examples. Supposing you love your mother. Is that reasonable? You love your mother? Yes, I love my mother. Supposing in your presence I started speaking something very unpleasant about your mother. Again and again and again. And I'm criticizing and speaking harshly and hostily towards your mother. How would you feel? That's how I feel. So please don't do that. You don't like my mother, go ahead and don't like my mother. Don't come into my home and criticize my mother. Please don't do that. It's just, it's rude. It's offensive. Please stop. Right now. If you can't control yourself, you don't like my mother, you know, there's the door. I'm not going to sit here and have you harshly criticize my mother. And this is my father, spiritual father, supreme father. You have an issue with him and you want to speak against him, there's the door. I can't permit this. I mean, that's one possible response. But please understand why I'm speaking the way that I'm speaking. We'll do it again. How would you feel? Imagine how I feel. invited you into our home, and here you are, defending Krishna. Please stop. Kindly, stop. Not easy to do something like that, but somebody that behaves in a manner like that, it's unruly. It's disrespectful. What do you do when somebody is disrespectful? Fundamentally disrespectful. And comes in just like does their what do you do? You're the protector of to some extent of the people that you invited into your home. And there he is trampling all over them. Should be done if it's going to be done. It should be done calmly and with grace and so forth, and like go crazy. But just to sit and be quiet about it, wish they don't. At least quietly say to yourself, "I hope he stops." And he keeps going. It's not. Something like that happened in a home program in, I'm not going to say where, someplace. And I happened to be there. So I just abruptly stopped the class and engaged directly in conversation with that person. So they wouldn't affect the others by what they were doing. It's just the class ended like that. And it was... won't go into the detail, but very an Indian woman that had become a Christian and she was doing her born again thing, criticizing this way, that way, the other way. It just abruptly ended the class. We, you know, said, okay, now it's time for prasadam, and sat, went directly and sat with her and had dialogue with her so she wouldn't affect the others. That's it, depending on the circumstance, what was. She brought her two, an Indian lady, brought her two sons, married to an American husband, and like, you know, born again Christian lady, frothing at the mouth. Very offensive, very rude. Rather than make a scene, that's what I did. Just boom, shot him, and conversation. He's the host, we'll call on him.
Most of us, we understand that by chanting all the sinful reactions are eradicated, but most of us don't do sin, like we don't hurt other people, and we help others, and we take care of our duties, children, family. So that doesn't mean that we can go to heavenly planets and enjoy all the time after this life.
Is that what you want? That's what you want?
Is there anything wrong with that?
You didn't answer my question.
You want to be happy all the time?
Well, that's not happy all the time. Because those who are... Read Brihat Bhagavatamrita when Gopakumara visits Brahmaloka and... He's overhearing a conversation with Lord Brahma, who is like in big anxiety that he's going to have to die. So, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "A Brahma Bhuvanal Loka Punar Arvartan Arjuna." From upper planetary systems down to the lowest, all our places are suffering, wherein repeated birth and death take place. You missed that verse in Bhagavad Gita. So if you want to be permanently happy, that's the spiritual realm, not the heavenly realm. Because they also undergo, like Prabhupada describes, you know, the daityas come and invade and take over. They're always afraid of losing their position.
whatever they have, someone might come to try to take it. So they're very protective. You know, it's not a permanent situation. It's an impermanent situation. It's unstable. So if you want to be permanently happy, there's another place. Vaikuntha. No anxiety.
I mean, by doing good things to others, we can go to Vaikuntha.
Depends on what those good things are. Right? The platform of bhakti is not simply punya. Devotees do good things for other people. But it's on the platform of transcendentally good things, not just temporarily good things. There's a big difference. It's like day and night difference. Like light and dark difference. Big difference. All right?
So if you do good karma, we cannot go to Vaikuntha.
That's right. That's right. You go to the good karma place.
And then we stay there all the time?
No. Chine punya marcha lokam vishanti. Chapter 8, Bhagavad Gita. Are you reading the same book I'm reading? You go to the heavenly planet, stay for some time, and then come down. When your punya account is gone, come down. Marcha lokam vishanti. So not by good works alone.
And animals and plants, we see around people who did simplicity became animals, or?
Well, yeah. Yeah. There's another place they go before that, but yeah. Sure.
Maharaji, out of this entire human population, there is a big number of people who, because of being born in a different country or a nation or a different sect or a religion, would probably never have the opportunity to get this wealth of knowledge or
yes.
really get the Krishna consciousness.
Correct.
So, like, what is the reason, like, that they will...
Why does someone take birth in a desert and someone else take birth in a paradise land? Why is one person born poor, another person born rich? Why is one person born in India, another person is born in America? Different karmas, different degrees of spiritual intent or piety or impiety, and the whole mix. It's a very complex arrangement. There's lots of residences.
The karma which a person has done not only in his current form
correct.
But in the previous one.
Correct.
But doesn't have any correlation with the current, like I agree
sure.
that if you take a
sure.
cumulative effect of all your previous lives, then it may be a different situation that you are in. But if you just look at the current.
No, it's not just the current, it's the big picture.
Understand that, but like it was like difficult,
no.
or, like really.
It's not narrow; it's big. The big picture.
Maharaj, we were discussing actually the verse of Krishna. He doesn't need to do any activity, but yet he comes and performs activity. So Could you please like go a little more deeper into that, like why he does that?
Compassion. He's attracting souls in this realm to come to the spiritual realm. That's what he's doing. Come enjoy with me eternally. And, well, how do I know it's going to be nice? Here it is. It's nice. It's all attractive. He's exhibiting his all attractiveness before the eyes of unqualified people because of his compassion to attract them to that place, to that realm, to that loving position. Okay? You have something?
Me?
Yeah, either of you. No. Yes, no, maybe.
Yes, no. Maharaj, I need news a lot actually. I see certain dizziness in some people, not everybody. Maybe we have been news by nature, maybe just portrays bad things happening in the world. There is more and more brazen, open, looting or exploiting system, making money in illegal means.
Yeah.
You see more and more in these days.
I've noticed. Therefore?
Where does it take us actually? Where does it take us actually?
Down.
Yeah, somebody is saying, if you read a newspaper saying that somebody is making 1 lakh crore rupees or something, illegal means, somebody, a child or somebody may think, oh, at least I should make 1,000 crores minimum.
Yeah, so the media doesn't help it. That's one conclusion.
Right.
The more violence there is, just like, you know, the violence in media, television, movies, it sells, so they produce it. And then it's more exposure, and so more people do it. They see it to see it, and so they just do it. It's, you know, it's technology in the hands of fools is very dangerous. Or technology in the hands of persons that don't have character, that don't understand how to elevate consciousness. It degrades consciousness. It accelerates degradation of consciousness. It's Kali Yuga. That's what Kali Yuga does. Accelerates the... It's like a visual image for me is like a vortex. Put something on the outside of the vortex, a whirlpool. It goes around and around, but as it goes more towards the center, it goes faster and faster and down and down. And it's gone. That's Kali Yuga. And it continues for another 427,000 years. So in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a description of what happens at the end of Kali Yuga. Very bad. Don't be around when that happens. So, like, impetus to the... But if one doesn't take that seriously, oh, it's the story. The degradation is happening in accelerating pace. There is a means by the designer of this place to get relief for those who want that relief, genuinely want that relief. And those that are so inclined, wishing to get some special mercy from Personality of Godhead, they can extend that same opportunity to others. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, there's no one more dear to me than he who presents this transcendental knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to others. A special dispensation. Does that cover?
Yeah, how can we keep our sanity in this?
Take shelter of Krishna. Sarva Dharmam. Pratyaja, mame kam sharanam braja, aham tvam, you know the verse? Aham tvam sarva papebhyo, all papa, all sinful reactions, taken away. You're given protection. Moksha Yashami. In case you're, I'm not sure, Krishna gives his reassurance. Mahasucha. Or here, in what Brahma is saying, because your question is from the receiving end, his is on the giving end. He's going to create this place that has got this vortex going. He's giving the direct indication by, here's the verse again. Let me take shelter of the lotus feet of him whose incarnations, qualities, and activities are mysterious imitations of worldly affairs. So, taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. One who invokes his transcendental names is certainly washed immediately of the sins of many, many births and attains him without fail. That's how you maintain sanity. Take shelter. And then not only maintain sanity, but help others maintain sanity. Because if someone's drowning, if you're in a safe boat, you can go out and pull them into the boat and bring them to safety, because it's very dangerous in the ocean water. This ocean of material existence, especially in Kali Yuga, is so turbulent, as you're pointing out. Good qualities are deteriorating rapidly. Scripture says it, and it's happening. Anything else? You have one?
Yeah. I was dilly-dallying.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, that's, this is regarding, I'm trying to sincerely do things, keeping Krishna at the center. Couple of instances, basically what happens is like, you try, but always there is a longing for credit. If something comes, you know, we want like people to give a credit, even though you know, even though I internally I feel I'm doing it, but unconsciously I'm always looking for a credit. I can give a couple of examples. One example was like today it happened. My office is at 6th floor of my workspace, so there was an insect when I was cleaning my second box. So I took the insect all the way down and I went to this ground floor and put it out. It was live insect. So this happened probably a couple of months back in my old office. That was old office location. And I did, and there's 4 people there said, hey, you're doing a fantastic job, you know, you're doing this, you're trying to save an insect, you know. So today, you won't believe, you know, when I was doing this, automatically the consciousness is something looking, you know, something seeing, you know, even though I know I'm doing it for a purpose, you know, I want this. This is one crude example. But there are other things coming up. So how do we overcome that, even though I want to do it? But there is always, you know, I don't know. I just thought, so that goes.
There's no substitute for purity. And the enjoying mood, fruitive tendency, carries right into spiritual activity. I'm doing something like, you know, I'm doing an act of goodness and I'm expecting something. It's fruitive. I want something from it. It's just ingrained. It's a stain. So how do you get rid of a stain? You keep scrubbing. You get a good detergent and a lot of elbow grease and you keep scrubbing. You keep scrubbing. Don't relent. Just keep scrubbing. Continue with the process that cleanses the heart and beware of that tendency. Be prepared. Here it's going to come. I know it's going to come. And say, you know, no. Let me do this just for, because it's to be done. It's proper to be done. In Madhurya Kandamani, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it's one of the anarthas, it's one of them. Wanting to be the enjoyer of merit or a little spiritual success. Wanting Labha, puja, pratishta, recognition from others, honor, glorification, appreciation. In one sense, you know, it's human, but in another sense, it's material. I guess that's what human is. You know, so it's not transcendental. So the correction is just to do each thing that we do in service to Krishna. For that reason. That Krishna be happy by this, not that I can be glorified for doing some service for Krishna. Constant, like, you know, reset and reset and reset, just, you know, recommit to that purpose. Stay on target. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. You had something.
Maharaj, does like previous karma will affect anyone or Krishna consciousness? Like the reason I was getting this point is
depends on how strong your Krishna consciousness is.
Like the reason I was getting this is like whenever like I miss a class for Bhagavan class or whatever it is, I think this kind of thought is coming. So probably I don't have the good karma. I'm not able to make it up or like health wise. Like I feel like when I
never heard that one before.
Like sometimes I can wake up in the morning. It's like I feel like I want to do it sincerely in the morning.
So stay on target. That's, you know, same answer. You know, the weakness is a weakness, and strength is the spiritual position. So stay with the spiritual position. You get strength, and if you fail, then go back again. Go back, you know, like a child learning to walk, that example from Nectar of Devotion. Because the power of walking is innately within the child. They just keep trying and keep trying and keep trying, however many times they tumble and fall. Just keep trying and trying, and the innate walking capacity comes out. So the devotional, the spiritual position is something that's natural for every living entity.
While chanting the holy name like every day, like mind will be taking me to the other services.
Really?
So I feel like knowing that it is really not so good. So yeah. I feel that it is something like doership mentality within me that is I'm able to. I'm always thinking of those things instead of paying attention to the holy name. So how to address this
dual mentality? Abhyasa. Keep practicing. And I've got another one. Get up a little earlier. So that you'll know that you'll have time to do those services. Oh, Maharaj. I think I'll keep practicing. Yeah, but if you get up earlier, then you'll feel fresher too. The early morning, isn't it true? The early morning is best for chanting. Just so it, you know, the tendency, it's again fruitive. I have, you know, we have a tendency to be attracted to those things where we're doing something, we're getting something done, we're accomplishing. It's the mode of passion. It's a fruitive mode of passion impetus. That's far more familiar to us. It's the mode that we're very, very familiar with. And what's there fruitive about chanting? You know, it's hard to keep the mind absorbed in something if you're conditioned or accustomed to achieving something. It is achieving something, but you know, on the fruitive side, it doesn't appear to be. It's spiritual work. Cleansing of the heart. Chaita Dharpana Marjana. So just continue staying with that process and the practice carefully. What do you think? Because previously, let's go back some maybe 4 years, 5 years or something like that, you'd probably be patting yourself on the back that, look, I'm up very early in the morning and I'm thinking how to plan out my day and it's going to go very nice, you know. Now it's another state where you're engaging in devotional practice and recognizing there'll be time for that. Here's one way to think. When it's time for doing my service, I will be able to do that service better, more effectively, if I was in pure devotion, in pure Krishna consciousness. So if I can just like keep focused, be present now in the activity of chanting, which is what I'm doing now, then I can be present when I'm doing the other duty and do it more effectively than planning it now and like imagining doing it in my mind now. Because then my mind will be on the next thing and the next thing. I won't be present at any time. So this is my time for Krishna. Let me be present with Krishna. He's the empowerer of my activity and my worshipable Lord. Let me be present with Him just for this period of time at least. And that will carry over to the other activity. Just stay with that effort. Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, is it okay to meditate on the pastimes of the Lord while chanting? Because I feel that it helps in my chanting.
You've asked this question before. Do you remember? I do.
Actually, what happens is when I retrospect, I feel that I have heard the holy name as well as my mind are also wandered through the pastimes of the Lord. So I'm not sure, can both happen simultaneously?
I'm not sure either. I know what our acharyas say, and I know what my experience says, but you know, you may have a unique set of experiences. But the mind is a binary processor. If your mind is on this, your mind is not on that. Your mind is on the holy name, your mind is on the holy name. If your mind is on the pastimes, your mind is on the pastimes. However, in advanced stages, what our acharyas describe is from absorption in the holy name, there's a sequence, nama, rupa, guna, lila. But the lila comes last in the line. From the chanting of the holy name, the qualities of the Lord. From the qualities of the Lord, the form of the Lord, the form of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord. Now there are practices or disciplines or just while chanting to see your deity or the pictures on your altar or invoke that mood, that even the image, and think that the mood is, while chanting, is calling to the Supreme Lord to please engage us in His service. This other, the mood is, it's a different mood. And specifically when chanting, that's the mood. And in a more elevated, really elevated state, spontaneously, in the case of the Goswamis, the pastimes of the Lord would be enacted in their heart. It's not like trying to do two things at once. Think of the, and chant the. Now what you're telling us, your experience is when you chant and think of the pastimes, then you feel you've done both. So I'm surprised. At least for sure, mm-hmm. Let your attention not go away from the holy name. That strive for that one.
Mm-hmm. What exactly happens is it's not always when I read something, certain pastimes or certain things stuck out so vividly, so it automatically comes.
Okay, that's all right. If it's so, your focus is on the holy name, mm-hmm. and you're thinking of the sound vibration of Krishna's holy name, and something is surfaces in relation to Krishna. You're not changing your focus from the holy name, uh-huh. and that which you read and were inspired by. That's okay. That's different. Then, you know, okay, now it's time to chant my holy name. Let me think of what I was reading before. Yeah, okay, that was that nice pastime. So your attention isn't going to the holy name. Mm-hmm. Your attention is going to, that's smarana, mm-hmm. that's remembrance, that's another process. Mm-hmm. That is a process, but, you know, when you're shravanam kirtam, it's shravanam kirtanam. It will lead to smarana. So when you're cooking or whatever, doing things, bathing, cleaning, something, those smaranam remembrances may come spontaneously arising in the mind. Okay, I think we're done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yeah. Yeah.